Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are now chatting with Brian London, editor of the Gold Newsletter and also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference this year, happening right in and around Halloween. Now, this segment, we're going to be really focusing just on commodities here. We'll start off with precious metals and move to some of the other commodities that are actually breaking out, including lithium. We haven't talked lithium in a little while. So, Brian, first and foremost, silver. Boy, oh boy, silver has been in all kinds of headlines, rightfully so. The price spikes that we're seeing at the tail end of the year and the volatility. The silver seems to be moving 2 to 5% every day as we're chatting this on Thursday. Silver is trading right in the mid-70s, $75, a little bit off of its highs of just over $80. But then there are some reports of in China, $90 silver. So, Brian, make sense of this volatility and the price spike in silver, please.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned silver's going 2 to 5% a day, but that's in either direction is kind of the key right now. And obviously, there's been some speculative interest and, you know, involvement in the sector. But what's happening right now in silver is something we literally have never seen before. And that's that industry is being forced to bid against investment demand for real silver supplies. That's never really happened before. And even when photography was a large component of silver's, you know, industrial demand, photography was really set up for reclamation and recycling of silver. So industry never had to really bid up to get silver supplies. And it's a crucial metal. It's crucial for its in its applications, and it doesn't add an awful lot to the end cost of the products it's involved with. That's starting to change, of course, but not until we get well over $100 of silver are we going to see industry really looking for some substitution in solar panels and the like. So silver is doing what silver does. You know, people ask me, why are you so bullish on silver? It have been over the last couple of years. And it's very simple, because in every long-term monetarily based bull market in gold, which is what we have, silver has outperformed gold. So it would have to be something exceptional to the contrary for silver not to outperform gold. And there's nothing like that. And quite the opposite. There are real physical supply constraints on silver right now. Industry needs silver. And this is the first time, again, that they're having to bid against investment demand, which, of course, follows price. So as this situation develops and drives prices higher, it only exacerbates itself and brings in more investment demand. Therefore, industry has to bid the price even higher. So it's a great time to be a silver bug.
Well, Brian, just to your point about, we've heard forever that there eventually the physical would swamp the paper markets. And lately we've seen the Shanghai Exchange, to Corey's point, trading quite a bit higher than the COMEX in Chicago. We've seen backwardation where the spot price of silver has been a lot higher, sometimes a dollar or two higher each day, sometimes several dollars higher than the futures price. And you've seen that physical tail wagging the dog. We have Chinese export controls that just started in January. You have silver being named as a critical mineral at the end of last year. You have all of these bizarro arbitrages that are trading. So I don't think a lot of people had that on their outlook for what was going to happen. How much of that do you think is spiking the punch bowl, all those other factors, along with the investment demand?
It's all contributing. It is a gumbo with many ingredients that are all positive for silver right now. You have the exchange raising margin requirements, which is, you know, it hurts the real hedgers in the market. It dampens speculation. But it's not going to do anything to prevent the industry from using the exchange as a means of physical delivery. And they don't really care. You know, they pay full price. They buy it on margin. They need the physical supply. So it all is, it's a vicious cycle that's exacerbating itself. And what we're seeing right now as we talk is some weakness in silver, some weakness in gold, and really across the commodity spectrum, because these commodity funds are rebalancing right now as we speak. So they're forced to sell the biggest gainers, well, that's silver, to get the allocations in their portfolio down to where they should be according to their prospectuses. So there is some selling pressure right now. The speculators and traders in the market saw that coming, and that's why we had some severe down days at the toward the end of the year and just over the last couple of days.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I read a recent note from TD Securities and they're recently shorting silver, citing that annual index rebalancing and saying silver could actually go down to $40 an ounce. That's their low side target. We'll see if that actually plays out. What about any stocks in the silver space then, Brian? A lot in South America, even a couple in the US, and even a couple up north in Canada. So any areas or any stocks that have your eye that are more, let's say, silver focused?
Yeah, really, all of them. They all look good. As I look at our portfolio, we just came out with a couple of new recommendations, one being Pacifica, and that has actually come back a little bit. There were early drill results. I think expectations were set a bit too high in the market. I like that as a longer term play. An earlier play in the sector, Mercado Minerals, is one that has not moved yet. Both of these, I think, are, the model for them as Mexican silver plays are Vizsla. And in fact, Vizsla, interestingly, has invested in both. And they have other connections to that group. So I like both of those places, early plays that have not yet really fulfilled Mercado's earlier stage and more risky. But I think it has a lot of potential over the longer term. And all of the regular ones, Vino, Vizsla, those are kind of on autopilot. They're going to be great plays. Vizsla is going to go into production or get bought out at a big premium. Prince Silver is waiting for drill results, or shareholders are waiting for drill results. I think they're going to prove to the market that they have a 100 million ounce plus silver deposit in Nevada. That's going to be very good for their market value. That's going to develop, I think, over the next, well, really over the next 12 months. I think they'll be able to get to that new resource. But the drill results are coming out soon, and that will really help. A lot of opportunity in the sector.
Brian, just one more follow-up on it. A lot of those were pre-revenue companies, the juniors, which is where the big action can happen. Normally, we see it filter down from the big boys to the mid-tiers to the juniors. A lot of people have asked the question, and I've got a lot of emails at the end of last year and this year, wondering why, if silver was up 141% last year, that the SIL, which is the big silver producers, was only up about 160%, and SILJ, which has really a lot of the mid-tiers in it, it's considered a junior profile, but it's got a weird mix. It's got some juniors in it, but it was only up 173%. It's funny to say the words only when you say 173%, but compared to silver being up 141 for the year, it wasn't that big of a spread. We're not seeing that 2x to 3x leverage in the bigger ones, and we're going to have earnings season coming up in a couple of weeks. Do you think that wakes up more generalists if they see big money being made? Because there's going to be a big gulf between Q3 and Q4, and it looks like between Q1 and Q4. So do you think we get more eyeballs on the space than we even have just when people realize these guys are printing money, literally?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the solution to that is time, and I think it will happen. It's been a weird market in that respect. In that, in typical or past metals bull markets, the stocks have typically actually led the metals, and I think it's all a sign or an outgrowth of the fact that Western investors are getting involved in this sector fairly late in the game. So as explosive as silver has been, and as sophisticated as traders have been, there's not a necessarily a reason to go in or do your research into the silver equities when silver's performing as well as it has. But you're right. Once the earnings come out and that disparity is obvious, then I think we'll see more generalist money coming in, and that's what we need.
I actually quite like the way this bull market is playing out. I find sometimes when the stocks get too far ahead of themselves, then that's when a lot of people, yeah, they chase it, but they also start having some losses in their portfolio. Right now, these stocks have just been consistently moving higher with some reasonable sell-offs and even, quite frankly, buying opportunities. Let's talk gold because, look, gold is also a major driver for simply interest into commodities. It seems to be one of the first commodities or metals that we'll bring in some generalists. And quite frankly, gold really started this bull market that seems like all these other metals are playing catch up to. What's your outlook for gold? Is that, again, close to all-time highs, but has vastly underperformed silver, at least in the near term?
Yeah, that's not the fault of gold. That's what silver does. I think gold is going to put in a very nice year. I think it's going to underperform last year. But, you know, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? I think a lot of what gold has been telling us will start to develop over the next year. And we'll see what gold was telling us. And that could spark another big rally or so. But gold's well-behaved right now. It's on autopilot. You know, I think it's going to keep rising. It can't be kept down. And I think this whole situation with Venezuela will only exacerbate and will only increase central banks' desire to have gold in their portfolios. And once again, they've seen the gun of the U.S. and the dollar pointed toward another country. And it is only going to increase that demand. And that demand has actually waned a bit toward the end of the year, because as the price goes up, central banks are buying less for the same amount of money. So from a tonnage standpoint, their gold purchases have waned a little bit or fluctuated a little bit. We actually had a good last quarter in central bank demand. So I think from a geopolitical standpoint, they're going to want to own even more gold.
Well, let's hope that translates over into more interest in gold equities. I think we are seeing that. We did see a big year in the ETFs last year. We've seen a lot of the producers have big runs really for a couple of years. The juniors and developers and explorers starting to get some action in 2025, more even than the traction that was building in 2024. So as we look to 2026, what are some of the gold equities or some of the areas of the gold equities that have your interest?
Well, you know, again, all of them. It's hard to say. Well, you know, I don't look at it thematically to much of a degree. I like the plays that used to be optionality plays, have big resources. They've moved a good bit. That play has actually worked very well. I think it will continue to work. You know, the classics in those regards are Seabridge and Banyan, and they've had great moves. I think Seabridge actually is a very interesting play. I think they're going to sign somebody up as a development partner at some point before the year end. They're very confident and open about that possibility. You know, I'm still very excited about exploration. It's not directly tied to the metals price, but what it is tied to is the excitement in the market and the ability of companies to actually get money and get funded and get drilling. So that's really starting to show the power of money going into the ground and what that does in terms of discovery. So I like a lot of the exploration plays. We're going to see what happens with Prospector next year. I think that's going to be a great opportunity at some point to buy over the, you know, the long news vacuum of the winter and in early spring. There'll be an opportunity, I think, to buy Prospector at a good price. And there are other good plays out here. I'm at a conference right now in Minnesota talking from my hotel room. And it's a little boutique, small conference that Relevant Gold is putting on. They have drill results coming out very soon on a very high potential technical play. You know, they're looking in Wyoming for basically an offshoot of the entire Abitibi Gold Belt. And they are the major player, if not the only player, in this sector, that area, with controlling a large portion of the entire gold belt. They have drill results coming out soon. And they would be a small miracle if they really hit grade on these drill results. But they're one of those plays that are set up that just a technical success would be enough, because there's a lot of smart money in the play. And if they hit the right kind of rocks, then I think that's going to be a catalyst for them.
Oh man, we're going to see so much drill results still coming out and so much more drilling happening this year, because everyone's cashed up and everyone has massive programs that they're all in the middle of announcing. Let's talk another metal that is in very much a bull market, but isn't getting the same kind of attention, and that's copper. Copper was recently up around $6, has come back a little bit, but quite frankly, the copper chart is just stair-stepping higher pretty consistently. I've noticed some of the copper stocks, some of the smaller ones playing catch up. Some of the big ones have been doing quite well for a while. What have you noticed in the copper space, and what is driving this copper bull market just in price?
Well, it is one of the, we're very fortunate right now in that we have two really secular bull markets in place for different reasons. The monetary metals for macroeconomic reasons, and the base metals and other metals and commodities in general for very distinct other reasons. And it's just a world of opportunity right now. The copper story is easy to see. It has been more slow moving than the gold story, but it's going to be steadier, I think. There's not as much, it's a larger market. There's not as much, there's not the ability of speculators and manipulators to move the market in the futures markets, but it is going to be a steady as she goes, set it and forget it kind of a story. I think copper's headed to $8. I've been saying that for years. And it's going to, along the way, we're going to see the copper plays benefit from that. We already have in our portfolio of gold newsletter, Gladiator Metals has been a great play for us. I think it's going higher. One that has not taken off yet, Intrepid Metals, is another great play that has been getting exceptional results lately. It's still a bit undiscovered by the market. So there are plays out there and ways to play it. And I think it's not the kind of a thing that you have to look at every day, but you find the good companies that have good projects and forget about them for a few years, and you're going to be really happily surprised when you look back at them.
Well, Brian, when you think about the copper juniors, which I know is the world we swim in, a lot of them are going after porphyry targets that are very deep. They're expensive holes, they're expensive to drill. So there has been a thematic in the industry to partner up with a larger company and have a strategic help you with the drill cost by coughing up some of the money for it, either on the project level or on the equity level. There's also companies that are gold companies that have a lot of copper in drag. And so they have a nice copper kicker along with the gold. And the gold's what's carrying the weight, but the copper is giving them maybe access to critical minerals funds or a different set of investors. Are there any ways that you're looking at playing the copper juniors in light of it being big deposits, big timelines, and expensive drilling?
Yeah, I think the juniors, obviously, they're not much as much in the development end, but is much more on the exploration side of the spectrum, as it were. And those are the companies that, I have a natural affinity for. There's a relatively new play out there, and actually new in our portfolio, called Tor Metals, that is drilling a great prospect in BC. In really trying to duplicate the geological model or find analogs to the New Afton copper gold mine that was much more compact, geologically distinct from your typical BC copper porphyries and high grade. So a lot of value in a relatively small footprint. They think that they've identified three or four analogs to that and have just drilled one of them, and we're waiting on results from that. So that's kind of interesting to me. I do own the company and did invest in it. But it's interesting to me because you don't often get those kinds of ground floor discovery opportunities in copper.
All right, Brian, a couple other areas, a couple other resources or commodities to talk about. I want to ask you about lithium, because lithium was one of the standouts a couple years ago. The stocks did amazingly well, and then lithium went through a massive correction. People are saying that market is done. But now it's back, and lithium stocks, almost all of them that I see, have gone through very impressive runs, even without some news. What do you see in the lithium space? Are you following lithium at all?
Yeah, I do. Not as much as the monetary metals and most of the other energy metals, but and that's largely because we see so many spikes and valleys in lithium and in that market. So it is not the kind of it's not the area or sector that I look to with a typical 2-year or 3-year time horizon for an investment. I think that market moves more quickly in the juniors, and you've got to get in quick and get in early and get out quick, because there are ways, and the big producers have ways to provide that to the market. So, yeah, I like it right now. I think it's got some headroom, and it can run in the near term, but you better move on it quickly because the turnaround can come pretty quickly as well.
Well, Brian, another energy metal that we saw spiking to kick off the year, one of the best performers on the 2nd of January, the first trading session, was the uranium equities. And the uranium equities had a big year in the middle of last year. Then they really pulled back hard from that October peak, kind of pulling back with a lot of the critical minerals, whether it's rare earths or antimony or tungsten, everything kind of sold off hard through November. And uranium got sucked down with everything else. But just some recent government action where they're going to be putting $2.7 billion into uranium enrichment at the end of last year. The Department of Defense announced $80 billion to go into new reactor builds, kind of breathed some life back in the sector, all the national focus on it. So the uranium stocks coming back alive again here to kick off 2026. What's your outlook on the uranium equities?
It seems like I am an eternal bull on uranium. The supply and demand story is, irrefutable, irresistible, and inevitable. But to paraphrase my friend Rick Rule, none of that means it's imminent. And but it's going to happen. And whether this is the one that sticks or not, we'll see. But it's kind of like copper. If you get in good uranium plays and you wait, you just set it and forget it. You're going to be pleasantly surprised because all of those factors, the SMR story for AI data centers and the like, is just another co new component to the uranium story, which obviously has supply constraints as well as irresistible demand curve. So, yeah, I like uranium, always have, and there are a lot of good ways to play that.
So, Brian, outside of oil, it seems like all these commodities are running higher, and you make the argument all these are in bull markets, at least right now. Even some of the much smaller metals are doing so well. Tungsten is also doing well. When was the last time you've seen this environment where it does seem like a major shift in focus towards investing in commodities?
Yeah, I would say the mid-2000s, like, 2005 to 2008 kind of a thing, before the great financial crisis. What happens is that gold is the bell cow, a bell cat. That's the one that starts the bull market. I don't think you have a sustainable long-term bull market in any of these commodities, especially in the equities and the junior equities, unless there's an underlying gold bull market that brings people to the sector. And then, they make their money in the gold plays and the silver plays, and they start looking around. The last big bull market of the 2000s, we saw the rare earth mania, we saw the uranium mania, and now we have different energy metals, critical metals, a lot of external factors that are contributing toward those. So I think it's not a thematic thing. It's not like I don't think people should say, well, I made some money in gold, now I'm all in on uranium, or I'm all in on rare earths or whatever. I think you need to look at each opportunity individually and try and see if that opportunity, that equity, that company is going to be one of the leaders over the next year. All of these things are going to rise. All of these companies, or the vast majority, are likely to deliver the kind of returns that I've been looking for years for my readers. So the job now is not to find a company that's going to go up two or three times over the next 18 months. It's to find the outliers, the ones that are going to dramatically outperform the rest of them, the four, five to 10 baggers that are going to be peppered throughout the sector. We've been doing a pretty good job of finding those, but that's the challenge right now. It is a target-rich environment. We have so many opportunities that have been handed to us by this market. It's just a matter of trying to find the outperformers.
Well, Brian, just a couple of years ago, we had a lot of people on the show, and we continue to have them that have been talking about how undervalued the whole commodity sector was compared to, say, the US equities or real estate or the bond market. And there was all these charts circulating from Jeffrey Gundlach and a number of big fund managers just showing how beat up the whole commodity sector was relative to other asset classes. Now that we're seeing kind of an across the board, except for with oil, we're seeing an across the board, at least in the metals and even in some of the soft commodities, a big run higher here. Is this part of a larger trend of the commodity sector finally getting its due? A lot of the big funds got rid of their commodities desk, or they got rid of their, the people that followed those sectors. They don't even have those people anymore. Could we start seeing a larger commodities run that really has some momentum, not just for a quarter or for half a year, but for years here?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of could we. I think we definitely are. There has been a lot of talk over the last couple of years about the switch from financial assets to commodities and that great turning, that great rotation. We are seeing that really in effect right now. So yeah, it is going to happen. It is happening because, the cure for low prices are low prices. So we will see a supply response. But the key here is that for so many of these commodities, there's been so little capital invested in discoveries. And for many reasons, the lead times from discovery to production have extended so long that there's not a really robust price response. Supply cannot come onto the market quick enough to really dampen the move. So that's one of the really exciting aspects of this bull market is that prices will rise precipitously, but it's going to be very difficult for supply to come onto the market. Copper is a particular story. There's charts out there that a little Googling, I'm sure people can find, that show, the number of big discoveries by decade, and it's dwindled. Where one decade, I think the 80s to 90s, we had a couple hundred big copper discoveries over that decade. Over the last 5 years, we've had six. So it's really tailed off. And it's not just because of investment has tailed off in exploration. It's really just the geological reality that these big deposits are becoming harder and harder to find. Now, as the price rises, what's going to happen is a lot of the known deposits that are lower grade, that weren't economic at lower prices, are now very economic and will be developed. But there are other constraints to doing that. There's just the time to develop a copper project. There's the ESG involved in a copper project. They're big. They make a big scar in the land and just the permitting milestones that have to be hit, the delays. So there it's And that's pretty much across the board, especially in base metals. It will be years before we see a supply response that can dampen the move. So it's another really target-rich, opportunity-rich environment.
Yeah, I really think this year we are going to see maybe multiple major discoveries just because of how much is being drilled, but we'll see if that comes out. We have seen these sort of discoveries. I guess they happen in bear markets too, but bull markets, when we're seeing this much money being put into the ground, hopefully we do get some major discoveries that people can really hang their hat on. Brian, we'll wrap it up here, but look, really, in summary, bull markets all around, tons of commodities moving higher, a lot of opportunities in the stocks, and there's a lot of news coming. So we're going to try to follow as closely as we can, and I know your newsletter, the Gold Newsletter, also follows along. You want to find out more about Brian's letter and the conference this year? You just have to click the link in the show notes. That'll take you over to the Gold Newsletter website. Brian, thank you so much for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. And everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. If you want to hear the full weekend show or any of our daily editorials or company updates, all recorded throughout the week every day, visit our website, kereport.com, or on YouTube or in your podcast player. Just search the KE Report. It's where you can listen to everything for free. Brian and everyone, thanks for tuning in this weekend. Have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.